Well, thank you so much, Michelle, for being with me today on the Wave Capital's guest speaker series on relationship building in a team environment. You're my 57th guest on my podcast.
Lucky number 57, Garrett. Lucky number 57. Heinz 57. Who knows who will be our 57th president? That's a few years from now,
right.
A few decades from now. Yeah, I like it. I like the number 57. Let's go with that.
Awesome. The lucky number 57 is my former ESPN colleague. And I'm so happy for you to be with me today. When you think of relationship building, Michelle, in a team environment, what does it mean to you? What has it meant for your professional career in journalism and in life in general?
Yeah, it's funny because ever since I started at ESPN, obviously covering the NFL and football in particular has been such a huge part of what I do and of my career writ large. Even before ESPN, when I was at Bloomberg TV and I originated the position of a sports reporter for Bloomberg TV, we were covering, I mean, this is way back when, we were covering the lockout in the NFL. And that was a huge story for Bloomberg Television because the NFL back in those days, and you know, you could even make the argument now, especially from a media rights perspective, the NFL is sports business more than any other sport. But I bring up football to say that I've heard many, many times coaches and players say that football is the ultimate team sport. Well, guess what? Garrett, you know this as well as I do. Television, if football is the ultimate team sport, television is the ultimate team sport plus, 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 plus. Because right. You don't get on TV. I mean, even what we're doing now, right? There is someone behind the scenes who is going to take what we're recording, who's going to make it look pretty or not. I'm pretty sure right. Most of you like to kind of like get the raw footage and get people behind the scenes, which I love. But there is going to be someone who's going to upload this, who's going to make any other edits if you need to make edits. There's someone on Spotify, on the Apple Podcast side of these things, who is going to be essentially enhancing the product that you have and getting it to its proper distribution channel. So whenever you do media, it's always going to be a team sport. And that requires, you know, I was watching a really great podcast recently with my former colleague, Janine Edwards, who
yes,
I...
another former guest on my podcast.
That's awesome. Yeah. And she was a bureau reporter as well. And she said something to the effect that really resonated with me, which is, it's all based on trust. And the great thing about ESPN is that, and I've heard this from people who have left ESPN and gone to other sports networks, I'm not going to name names here, but there is someone recently who told me, here's the thing about ESPN, everybody's got their blank together. He didn't use the word blank. People there have high degrees of trust in each other because you've worked really hard to reach these positions. If you're hired there, you know what you're doing. You're doing your job, right? As Bill Belichick would coin it. So for me, relationship building starts with trust, being able to kind of like, maybe not hold hands and kumbaya with everyone, but right. At least know that we are all rowing the boat in the same direction.
And did you always aspire to be a SportsCenter anchor or reporter? Yeah. When you were younger, did you think, wow, I'd love to work at ESPN one day? Because as you had talked about with Bloomberg, you start off in business, but still had the sports angle going. What made you want to transition from Bloomberg to ESPN? But also to my first question, did you aspire to be a SportsCenter anchor when you were younger?
You know, the quick answer to the last question that you asked, did I ever aspire to be a sports anchor, is no. I think that's one of the great bonuses of my career, the gravy, if you will, is I've had the opportunity to anchor SportsCenter on a number of occasions as a fill-in anchor. And for me, that's perfect because my core competency is reporting, is gathering information and presenting information, hopefully in an entertaining and compelling way. But I think what adds to that skill set is being able to step into a studio, Garrett, and you've worked in studio before. You know how chaotic sometimes it can be, especially
absolutely.
In a breaking news right. situation or in a late game situation where you're expecting a certain outcome and at the very last minute things change on a dime. You know, obviously football, game of inches, you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
But having that ability to be in a studio and to direct traffic, if you will, and to take the lead and be that steady, calming force when everything is going crazy around you, I think makes me a better reporter. And I think having been in the field and doing that and being in studio, I think that makes me a better anchor as well. So I think that what's so great about ESPN is having the ability to sort of compound, you know, in business, as you know, wave capital, you know about business, you know all about compound interest. I think it's the same thing with our skill sets, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like you can keep your money in the savings account in the bank, or you can put it in and get almost nothing for it. Or
Sure.
you can put it in a 6 month CD or three year CD or money market or invest it in the market. The same thing with your skill set. If you're not looking to add to your skill set all the time, your asset, which is your skill set, is essentially going to be like that money that is just sitting in a savings account and getting nothing. You're going to atrophy. It's sort of like the use it or lose it thing, right?
Right,
So for
exactly.
me, I think, having had a business background, I was an econ major in college. I definitely followed the Mark Cuban line where he says, don't follow your dreams. I mean, listen, I'm from an immigrant background.
Me
If
too.
you tell your parents I'm following my dreams, they're gonna be like, I don't know about
Right.
that.
Right.
Which is probably its own separate conversation. But
Sure.
you know, my mom is Filipino and she came halfway around the world to essentially support her family, right? She came from a large family. She had eight siblings that she was the oldest one and she was going to support. So when I went to school, I wasn't going to go for journalism. You know, I was going to go for something that my mom, even to this day, is like, why don't you start a business? And I'm like,
Very
maybe
practical. Starting a business is very practical.
it's very practical. And
Right.
also, you know, I remember early on in my career, she would say stuff like, well, you know, you can always work at the bank, which, by the way, is true.
Right.
I can't always work at the bank. And it's kind of funny that she still has that a little bit like anxious, and it comes from a place of love, of course.
Of
She
course.
still has that anxious personality around, you know, they want a stable, you know, prestigious, good paying career for their child. And I totally get that. And that
Right.
was part of the reason I became a business major and went into, I remember my dad telling me, go into business news because business people pay for news. He was very early on, he was very early on the subscriber model.
Right. Wow. Very,
And
very
so
intuitive.
it was very prescient. And I would end up working for Bloomberg News, which was a phenomenal place to kind of really, really deepen your knowledge, really learn how to write, by the way, how to write multi-platform. And when I was working on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, Garrett, and this is when I was covering the markets, of course,
Sure.
I would talk to the traders on the floor, and normally we were talking about the Mets, you know? You would talk, that was one way to build relationships, is find things that you have in common. And one thing that a lot of people have in common, guess what, is sports. You watch the
Right.
game less. One funny line, because I'm not a Knicks fan, I grew up in Chicago, but one funny line I would use on the traders on the New York Stock Exchange is, hey, do you hear about what happened with the Knicks? And they would always, and immediately it'd be like, what'd they do now? You know? It was a different era for the Knicks,
It's
but
funny
and I
you
would just
mentioned
laugh.
about the Knicks on the stock exchange floor, and then all of a sudden, because the Knicks, if they weren't doing well, which they haven't in recent years, they've
In
gotten so
recent
much
years,
better.
it's been different, but back then you could be like, "Do you hear what they did?
You don't
Did
want
you
any
hear what's
stocks to
going
go
on with the
down
Knicks?"
because it's like, you know, the sentiments of the Knicks, and then.
Right. And then, right, shifting gears to better things, let's talk about the subprime mortgages. No, but you know what? I think the producers would just hear a lot of the time, the producers in the control room would hear me talking about sports. And I would pitch, you know, even when I was covering the markets, I would pitch sports stories. And because, you know, I was a fan, right? I wanted to do sports to the extent, like, everything can be a business. The beauty of business news, Garrett, is that everything can be a business story. If
Sure.
there's a dollar involved, if there's $1 involved in what you're covering, it can be a business story. And of course, sports is a huge business. So there was one week that I did a story on Tiger Woods essentially being the needle. He doesn't move the needle. He is the needle in the golf business. And I would say that it almost exists now. I mean, I'm really curious to see what the Rory McIlroy ratings are from Sunday, because that was
Right.
insane. Like, that is going to be, I mean, that was crazy. That was a roller coaster.
It was. That was such an amazing matchup with Justin Rose. I was worried,
Totally.
but I'm happy for Rory too.
I'm thrilled for Rory. I think it's crazy he hasn't won a major in 11 years. I didn't know that he hadn't been even in the top 20 in like 6 or 7, in the top 20 heading
Right.
into the weekend in like 6 or 7 years.
Right.
So I'm thrilled for him. I'll be really interested to see the ratings, because I saw the ratings from the first 2 days and they were down. They were down compared to years where Tiger Woods is in it. Anyways, so this was a really big business story, and so I pitched it and I did it for Bloomberg, and I was doing the story from the standpoint of like CBS and some and NBC and some of the big rights holders at the time around golf. Well, guess what? The next week, Tiger Woods got into a huge fight with his wife, Elin, and they had not just, I mean, they had zero people. They had no one to cover that story. And so the head of the network said, "Michelle, we want you to cover Tiger Woods." And my response was, and you know, if he does a comeback, but we certainly want you at least to cover this scandal, because it was a huge deal. And at that point, it was like maybe Tiger hasn't even reached half of his career earnings.
Right.
You know? I mean, that's how big Tiger was. So my response was very mature. It was, "No, I'm good." And the reason I said no is because I did not see sports. It was very naive at the time. I just didn't see the, for me, it was something fun. Something fun I could do on the side. What am I doing covering sports at Bloomberg? You
Right.
know, it would be like covering business at ESPN.
Exactly. I mean, it'd be interesting because as you've been explaining and showing like your in-depth knowledge of business news, and I want you to continue your story about Tiger, but maybe we could talk a little bit later about did you ever think
Let's put a
about,
pin in it.
yeah, let's revisit the Tiger story. I just wanted to put a little nugget in there by saying, did you think about, because of your business knowledge, maybe I'd like to be a sports agent, or maybe I'd like to educate athletes on
Wow.
financial investments and things of that
Yeah.
nature.
No, that never entered into the equation for me. I'd never had a desire to be on one of the sides of, say, a negotiating table, right? I mean, I think if there was anything that I would be drawn to, maybe it would be working for, at that time at least, because I had done so much with the NFLPA. And even the NBAPA, because both of
Sure.
those leagues were in collective bargaining agreement negotiations. So I think having worked and seen up close what the PA does, I think that would have been interesting to me. But I've always been interested, first and foremost, you know, when you say, like, did you have a desire to be a SportsCenter anchor? No, I didn't have a desire to be a SportsCenter anchor. What I was mainly interested in doing was being a storyteller, kind of no matter the format, right?
Right.
So I love breaking news. I love crossover stories. I love stories about, more and more, I think the older I get, the deeper I get into my career. And I think the more media trained that a lot of star athletes become, where you have, you know, especially in the era of NIL, you have teams. You have a marketer, you have an agent, you have a PR person in some cases. Where you go into things a lot more polished, and you don't necessarily get like the unvarnished story, which I think can benefit an athlete more than the polished, perfect media trained story, because I
Right.
think authenticity matters so much in this marketplace, and
Yeah.
more than it ever has before. So, just to going back to the pin in the Tiger Woods story, and just to wrap that up, I said no, and then he said, "Think about it." And then he asked again, and I was like, you know, probably not. No, I'll just keep covering markets. And he's like, well, this is less of a request at this point. This is
You don't have
it'll
a
take
choice.
your yeah. He's like, you know, that you know this like this is a job and stuff where we can ask you to do things and actually assign you to do things. So at that point, I was like, okay, fine. So I did it, and it ended up, I mean, I thought, Garrett, I thought it was gonna be a full-blown one-off, you
Right.
know. And then stuff just kept happening. I ended up going to the Masters that year, because Tiger would compete. And by that point, sports had become a real beat. They found out that the segments where I was on, the segments where we had sports, were really rating and were really popular with people. And so it ended up being a full-on beat. They named me essentially their official, right, Bloomberg sports reporter. And then a couple years later, I went to ESPN. So and at that point, the reason I went to ESPN was my agent had said, "What are you doing at Bloomberg covering sports?" The same question I had asked myself to say no to sports was the question he asked me to say yes to sports, because we had at that point broken some news, we were doing some really interesting stories, and ESPN was expanding. I don't remember when Mina Kimes was hired on, but we were both at Bloomberg before we went to ESPN, and I think ESPN was starting to have a more expansive idea of what a reporter could bring to the table,
Right.
right?
Even our former colleague, or my former colleague rather, Chris Cotter, I mean, he had a financial background too when he went into
Chris
sports.
Cotter, he was from Fox Business. I mean, he was my colleague too. He was at ESPN, right?
Our colleague Chris Cotter, I mean, you and Mina Kimes, I mean, it's not a, people think it might be an uncommon transition, but it's really not, because when you look at sports and you look at it in a, you can look at it in a very business-like way. You really can.
Oh, totally. And you know what? It ended up being really, again, really prescient to have that background. It was not planned to have a business background and go into sports. But if I was going to counsel people who are going to go into sports, I would say, you know, right, try to go to a D1 school, try to make connections within the coaching staff and, you know, within the players even, because those are the people that you may very well end up crossing paths with if and when they go professional. But if I were going to counsel people today who are looking to go into sports, you know, my advice is usually like don't go necessarily into journalism. Don't go 100% into like I'm around the team all the time. I mean, it's one thing if you want to pursue a coaching job, right? And then being a manager of the team makes sense. But if you want to go into like the sports media business, I would develop a complementary skill set to sports. Like every sports team, as I mentioned, every league, every team is a business. They're going to need people to do legal. They're going to need people to do accounts receivable. They're going to need people to be really good at telling stories. And like just liking sports is not going to get you in the door. Having a skill set, and usually it's a hard skill set, is going to be the thing that gets you into the door.
And my background is journalism and mass communication too. I never would have thought, 15 years ago when I graduated, I did a lot of different things. I interned on Capitol Hill because I thought I wanted to go into politics.
Oh, really?
I still have a great interest in public policy. I would love to be in that environment more, and becoming,
Yeah.
a subject matter expert in finance and business and stock market and domestic and foreign affairs. I mean, that really interests me. And then I worked at NBC Universal on the National Assignment News Desk as a desk assistant. That's how I met Chuck Todd, who I just had on my,
Oh wow, that's so cool.
who I just had on my podcast. And then from NBC, I went to ESPN, and then I had briefly my own radio show for an ESPN CBS affiliate in Raleigh, North Carolina. I did high school and junior college sports play-by-play sports broadcasting, contract position. Then I was a marketing assistant for this, you know, sports real estate startup company that now is has millions of visitors a year. I don't know if you're familiar with Lake Point Sports, but Wave Capital Partners, we provide the first $52 million to finance Lake Point Sports in Georgia back in 2013 and 2014. And then I got my real estate licenses in North and South Carolina, practiced real estate for a little bit. But then when I joined Wave Capital Partners, I felt, you know, family business, but I can utilize my journalism skills, my public relations skills, marketing skills. You know, I'm an advocate, I'm a promoter. Business development had always interested me.
Yeah.
It's just amazing, like with your career, mine and others, what happens, what manifests, right?
I think that your ability to communicate is directly correlated with your ability to be compensated.
Sure.
Just period. Because we're living in an era where it's very difficult to cut through the noise. That is one of the reasons why I think Caitlin Clark has been, in any era, of course, she's going to be a huge star. But there's a reason why, say, and this is like no disparagement on Sue Bird. It's essentially the reason why Sue Bird and even Diana Taurasi, to an extent, didn't cut through and become like household brand names. Everybody knows them as soon as they see them. Even non-sports fans. Is the era that we're living in, it's so hard to cut through. And when you have someone like Caitlin Clark, who is able to just cut through all the noise, all the social media, television, there's so many different options that people have right now to be entertained. And people know, I mean, my nieces are 9 and 13 years old. They know her. They're not sports fans. They play sports, but they're not sports fans. They look at her and they know exactly who she is, where she went to college, what team she plays for now. And they know her skill set.
Right.
That's worth a lot of money, you know? So Garrett, like bringing that skill set and being able, you know, to communicate and hopefully cut through.
Right.
Is something that's worth something. And companies are looking for people who can manage that.
Right.
Manage that. Yeah.
And it's such a, you know, a lost art, if you will. I think, to your point, cutting through that noise, and it shouldn't be a lost art.
It's very difficult. It shouldn't be a lost art, but it's very difficult.
It is. It really is, because, you know, people sometimes, in my opinion, companies rather, can take it for granted how important it is to have that, the glue person, right, to keep the organization together. And that's what I did at Wave Capital. I was like the glue guy. I got to give credit where credit's due. When I interviewed Gus Ramsey, another ESPN guy.
Yes, Gus, of course.
He used the term glue guy in our interview, and he was talking about our late colleague and friend Barry Sachs. He was saying Barry.
Wow.
So that's where I got that reference from.
Man, I really wish that I had worked with Barry Sachs, because seeing the outpouring of emotions, you can just tell immediately how he treated people and how much he cared about people.
Yeah.
And in such a fast-moving business, in a business that, Garrett, as you well know, is changing all of the time, you know, ESPN in the year 2000, in the year 2010, in the year 2020, in the year 2025 are just different companies.
I know.
Having that next level, right, of really caring for other human beings, not just as, you know, employees and colleagues, but as human beings. I mean, I was really touched by how much people cared about him and showed that he cared about them as well. It really touched me to see that. I felt a little bit the same when one of our colleagues retired. You might not know the name, Tony Farkowski.
Sounds familiar. I haven't had the privilege.
He was a pro producer and he retired. Sure. And his last assignment was Monday Night Football. And Garrett, they did a like 3 minute or 4 minute piece on him on Monday Night Football. And I remember texting him and saying, like, Tom Brady didn't get that when he retired. It was so cool. But like, that's what I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning, which is television is the ultimate team business.
It
And you
is.
want to have trust in people. And the other thing I tell journalism students all the time is like, try to develop a hard skill, try to develop a complementary skill set to just liking sports. And also try to be easy to work with, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not just your reliability and availability, but likability.
And relatability.
Yeah.
If you can relate to as many people as possible, but I think likability for sure, to your point, likability for sure. You don't have to necessarily relate to somebody on all different levels, but you have to just be a well-liked person. I agree with you, Michelle. You really do.
Yeah, and try to be fair. And, going back to relationship building, I think it's something that happens over a long period of time. I think a lot of times for me, when I'm parachuting in, right, and doing a story, and I don't have a deep resource, deep relationship, say, with like the head of PR for a certain team or what have you, I think building up a portfolio where you're seen as a straight shooter. And where you're seen as fair and you treat people fairly is really important. And that's something I learned very early on in my career. Don't blindside people. If you're going to come out with a critical story, call them, make sure they know it's coming down the track so that they can alert people in their lives, right? There's not going to, I am team no surprises.
Which is the best way to be. Being
Yeah,
transparent.
you try to be fair and then. And then to the extent that you can, call people, like especially being in a remote position where you're far away from the coast, I'm based in Chicago.
Sure.
Call people, check in with people, celebrate their successes. If something like you just have to, a relationship is not something that you sort of like, right, you put money in the bank and you walk away. It's something that you have to manage.
Of course. I just spoke with our former colleague, John Anderson, who just retired after 25 years.
I love John Anderson.
Great guy. And I called him up and I just want to see how he was doing. And he was just in the middle of grading papers and waiting for a student because now he teaches at the
University of
University of
Missouri,
Missouri.
right?
And to think that, again, it's like a blast from the past for me growing up and watching John Anderson and Scott Van Pelt or Stuart Scott and all those guys, Dan Patrick, and to pick up a phone and say, "Hey, John, how's it going?" And he was on my podcast too, and and now he's in a totally different realm, if you will. I mean, he's freelancing, but now he's teaching students and giving back and paying forward in that way. And it's like we all wear with different hats, right? But at the end of the day, we're journalists, yes, but it goes back to relationship building. You're building relationships in
Yes.
different ways, in different spheres.
Yeah, and I remember when John Anderson wrote an essay about Green Bay and what it meant to him. His mom raised him and his siblings originally as a single mom, right? And for him, what it meant when a department store closed in Green Bay, and I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but it's an essay that is very much worth Googling and looking up. I think it ran in the local Green Bay newspaper. Gosh, you think you know someone, sort of like watching them on a TV show and seeing their personality. And I feel like John Anderson has such an authentic voice. I felt like, even though, we didn't really cross paths much in Bristol unless like I was on one of the late shows, but that really gave me such a deep insight into his background, who he was, the things he cared about, and just the emotions that he was able to tap into through that
Right.
piece. And everybody can relate to being a child and going to, say, a department store with your mom.
Sure.
And I wrote him at the time when the essay came out. It was one of the things that like moved me the most. I think that year, the things that I had read. And I think he should write a, personally, I think he should write a book because he's an
Sure.
amazing writer. I hope maybe he's pursuing that in Missouri. But on the day that he left ESPN on his last day before he went to Mizzou, I wrote him again and then, mentioned again that essay. And he was like, this means so much. We'd like love to have you in the class, be a speaker in the class. And I love that. I'm gonna, as soon as he comes out with the schedule, I'll be there, and that's part of the relationship as well. It doesn't just stop when you leave a company, right?
Right. I'm hoping that you're able to, reconnect with him. And I'm so glad that you
he's obviously listening to this podcast. So John, call me. I already said that I could do your class.
Yes, absolutely. And what I'll do is I'll help the cause by, letting him know that we had this conversation.
Yeah. He was definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah. I love that story, touched you and moved you, because it's all about relationship building too. Not just like in the physical sense of like being like in front of somebody, but you're also building relationships indirectly through the stories that you read or the conversations that you hear, or even like the conversations we're having. We're learning about other people who we cross paths with, or even people who cross paths with them, but we still have the indirect ties. And when I think of, John Anderson or Barry Sachs, I was the ESPN ABC College Football Live production assistant every Saturday for 13 Saturdays in the 2011 season. So working with John, working with SVP, Scott Van Pelt, Jesse Palmer, the late John Saunders, Robert Flores, and then the other studio, I got to work with Wendy Nix and Reese Davis and Lou Holtz and Mark May. And Lou Holtz, another gentleman, he's my first guest on my podcast. So it brings more meaning to me. I thought it brought a lot of meaning to me then, which it did. But to be older and wiser and more experienced, and then now to be able to have these conversations with them or people like yourself who I'm meeting for the first time, it means a lot knowing that although my time at ESPN was what people would say is a little bit more brief than others who had been at the network longer, I had a very significant, year there, or really season there, that it really just changed the course of my life and put me on a different path that I'm so grateful for. I remember Bill Graff, who worked with Rob Lemley, and I remember sitting down with Bill Graff in his office, and he said, you're just not an ESPN employee, you're an ABC employee, so you're representing two networks. And no matter how much longer you're going to be at ESPN, whether it's a short time or for a long time, you're going to look back on these years and say, wow, it really changed your life, is what he essentially was saying. And it did, because of that time in ESPN, it's allowed me to, think of this platform to be able to interview a lot of former colleagues and a lot of people who I share commonalities with, whether ESPN or NBC or other places. And then for us to have the time together to talk and chat, I credit my ESPN years. And that's why, wanting to know about, you in terms of what were your favorite interviews and what were your favorite moments at ESPN, like anecdotes, or just would love to have you share so my audience and my viewers at home could really, get to know more about Michelle Steele.
I appreciate that. I think that in terms of favorite interviews, it would have to be back to New England and Rob Gronkowski, who is not surprising me with how big a star that he's become for Fox, because he's like a big, he really is like a big kid, a big teddy bear, but he also is really, really smart.
Yeah. And,
he was very, very, Belichick isn't hiring generally just people who are, oh, he's a big teddy bear, right? Like, he's bringing guys into that organization who know their stuff. And so I would say Gronk was one of my favorites. It's been interesting watching Brady from the vantage point of someone who used to cover him. I was in England, New England from 2013 to 2016. Mm-hmm. I was a little bit skeptical because Brady is so careful. He was so sort of
nuanced.
Yeah. And I think that he was also he tried to be very, very diplomatic in a lot of situations, which in a lot of ways is antithetical to what you want on TV. You want someone who's going to give like the hottest take. I do think that he is settling into that role a little bit more. I like having seen him in the booth. I think he's been stronger with the last few games. Another really good interview, or rather stories that I've done, Danny Farquhar, who was a middle relief pitcher. You might not know the name, but he had an aneurysm in game, like during a game, and I
Wow.
covered that. Yeah, I covered that as an investigative piece, and we tracked his comeback back to the mound. And that was it was amazing seeing what a family affair at the end of the day sports is. You know, his wife and his kids, like getting him back onto the mound so that he could pitch again in the bigs. And he ended up doing that. Now he's a pitching coach in Seattle, which is great.
Thank God he's doing well, recovering, I hope.
He was able to recover. You know, it was just a blessing that it did happen in a game, right? Because
Right.
there was the medical staff that was on site. You know, so many of the stories that I've covered that are very memorable for me, unfortunately, are not like the happiest stories to talk about, Garrett, on a podcast. I a little bit was like the you know became the serious person for a long time,
Sure.
especially with the Aaron Hernandez story, which I covered at the very beginning of my New England Patriots stint when
Right.
I was there. But the stories that I've really enjoyed, you know, one recent story I did was the McNeese State, you know, the
Yeah.
McNeese State manager that I sat down with very early on, like right when he was getting to be viral. Because people, I love stories when you're talking about someone who is behind the scenes, who does a thankless job that nobody knows, but guess what? Every single player on that team appreciated what he did. And I
Sure.
love bringing those kinds of stories to the fore.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Aaron Hernandez because I would imagine, and I know that's not exactly the same, but just how, like, for example, you covered Aaron Hernandez, but you could have a conversation with somebody who from 20 years prior had to cover OJ Simpson. And probably at the time, people were thinking, well, is this, you know, it's a very tragic and upsetting story. Made international news, but it is history. And so, just like how you covered Aaron Hernandez, somebody could say, "I covered the OJ Simpson trial," and then people will not really look at that and judge it from the standpoint of like, "Oh, that's just a really sad or upsetting story." Well, it was a monumental, right? You know, OJ Simpson, you know, in the Ford Bronco being chased by, you know, police covering the Aaron Hernandez story, people remember him being escorted out of his house
Of
in handcuffs.
course. I was there when he was escorted out of his house wearing the white t-shirt in handcuffs, red basketball shorts,
Unbelievable.
and he had dress shoes on. He had dress shoes because
Yeah.
he clearly didn't think he was gonna, he didn't think that it was the last thing on his mind that he was gonna get arrested that day. So he hadn't even prepared, you know, which is crazy because the police had been to his house for a few weeks at that point, and he was defiant all the way to the end.
Yeah.
All the way to the end. Yeah. But my favorite assignment at ESPN probably so far has been a toss-up between the spelling bee
Yeah.
and which was just a phenomenal, like if you've ever wanted to work for a game show, I feel like that's what it would be like. You know, where you're interviewing people. You know, what are you going to do now after you lose a spelling bee? And they're like, I'm going to go back to fifth grade.
No, I mean the script spelling bee is iconic. I
It's
remember growing up on
iconic. Everybody at ESPN, unfortunately, we don't have the rights anymore, but when we did have the rights, everybody wanted to do the spelling bee. And the other
sure.
thing that I really like doing, and this is just in terms of my own personal, like, my own sort of personal affinity for public service, because my
Yeah.
dad served. Is the
Oh,
Warrior
well.
Games.
Wow, thank you for your father's service. That's wonderful. I've had family members serve too. That's wonderful.
U.S. Army
Great.
is the Warrior Games, where the former service members, veterans who have come back and injured in some way, shape, or form, and that can take many different forms, whether it's a physical injury, sometimes it is more of a PTSD or a mental injury. But they get to be on a team again.
Yeah.
And Warrior Games is essentially like it's like a Olympics, right? For these guys coming back. And that has been, those have been, I went to VA hospitals for that. We covered it as a part of ESPN coverage, and that was just great. So those are the things, like it that really, really spoke to me.
I'm so glad it did because, I mean, when you think of, wounded warriors and people who come back from service, I mean, it's so sad. They feel like they're forgotten and they feel that, they're not like a whole person anymore. And it takes people like yourself and others who are in their corner and giving them a voice and hearing them out and being there for them and allowing them to compete in sports and feel that they are part of society again. And it's so needed and it's so special. And I love
Not
that you.
just part of society, but part of a team. You
Yeah.
know, you cover a lot of athletes who have one of the most traumatic things for an athlete is when their sports career ends.
Right.
And there's the saying, athletes die twice. They die a physical death like everybody, but they also die, their identity dies when they
Right.
leave sport. And when you're a part of the armed services, you are in a lot of ways, you are part of a team. You are
Yes.
part of the team. The way that you get things done is to work as a team, and you have to have a cohesive vision also for what this country represents, right? And to believe in something bigger than yourself. So when that ends, not being a part of that team and but having an opportunity then to be a part of this squad, right, for Warrior Games really, really, really means a lot to people.
Of course.
So
And
yeah.
you having a father who served, talk to me a little about your family dynamic.
You know, just in terms of my parents, like I said, that my mom was an immigrant, or is an immigrant rather, and she doesn't know anything about sports at all. Like I'll say, hey mom, I'm with the Cubs today, and she'll say, "Is that a baseball team?"
There you go.
Which is amazing.
She has you to be her educator on sports and be the right there to like tell her, no, the Cubs are a baseball team, yes. So thank you so much, Michelle. Really appreciate you being here. Loved hearing everything about your background, your career, your time at ESPN, the interviews that have impacted your life, the relationship building aspects of being at ESPN and even being at Bloomberg News and the transition, how that worked so well for you. Any final words on relationship building? Any advice that you would like to impart on our audience, our viewers, before we depart from our interview today? And thank you so much again for your time.
Yeah, of course. I would go back to do something that I think is a hard skill, whether it's editing, whether it's putting together a website, right? Whether it's being really, really good at some of the techniques and intricacies of learning social. And obviously that is native to say someone who is part of the Gen Z generation. But I think coming into a situation where you have a hard skill to bring to the table, a little bit of a niche, sports is so competitive, that's going to allow you to really stand out. You know, I think for me, my business background helps me stand out from sort of the rest of the pack. And then the second piece of advice is something that is a little bit more like touchy-feely. It's not as like practical as what I just said, or rather like brass tacks, like I just said. It's more try to be happy. And by that, I mean, if you do something that makes you happy, now, a lot of times when you come from an immigrant background, the guidance your parents give you is try to be rich. And by the way, nothing against that.
Right.
If that's your mandate, do it. But a lot of times you're trying to be rich so that you can be happy. So if you just try to be happy, a lot of times the rest of it will follow. You
I
know what
agree
I'm
with
saying?
that. I definitely agree with that.
So if you try to be happy, you're already one step ahead of the equation.
Yes. I
That's
agree because happiness makes you think so clearly.
right. It gives you a little bit of a guiding star, right? And then for me, like whenever I've thought about jobs I want to do, and that includes like say anchoring SportsCenter, I've thought to myself, is this fun and is this cool? And if it like hits both of those things, it works. You know, like there's obviously always going to be practical considerations, but for me, that was like a stand-in for like these things will make me happy.
Sure.
And not every day is going to be fun in games, even in sports, right? I've covered Aaron Hernandez, I've covered Deflategate, I've covered stories that are not fun, but you can make part of every day fun. You
Yeah.
can, right?
Glass half full instead of glass half empty. That mentality. I mean, going in may not be the best day, or you pray that you don't have any the worst days, but even if your day is just okay, I mean, we're alive, we're well, we're healthy, you have a great career, have your family to support you, you have your friends, you have your colleagues. And so as long as you're happy and as long as you or you try to be as happy as you can be, yeah, you're exactly right, Michelle. Things will fall into place because it has you thinking about so many different things about how do I want to maybe invest in this business today? Or maybe I want to take up a new skill today, or maybe I want to read this book today, or maybe I want to, get more back into exercise or, travel. And, it's just there's so many things that can make us happy, but experiences do make people happy. But it's also like when you wake up in the morning before you start your daily regimen, you could be happy when you wake up and you could be
Actually,
happy when
happiness is a choice.
it is.
Happiness is a choice. There's always going to be challenges. There's always going to be adversity, but how you frame it to yourself, I think, makes all of the difference, you know?
Yes. And
Because,
happiness is a skill that you need for relationship building.
and guess what? Yes, because people want to be around you if you're not going to be a bummer. But you know, I think that happiness needs reps. Like, that is something that you need to work on. I've been really blessed that growing up, my dad had a really very funny sense of humor. And there was never a situation like I saw him, you know, feeling sorry for himself really just a couple of times. I remember it was his mother had passed away, and then maybe like one other time, you know, and he just always had a very light touch. And I think that that's a real, I think that's an American quality in some
Right.
ways, you know, having a sense of humor about things and having the optimism that, you know, we'll get them tomorrow,
Right.
right?
Yes.
And I think no matter how much things change, I want to have that attitude. Like, guess what? We'll get them tomorrow. Go have a coconut ice cream or something.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Well, thank you so much, Michelle, again, for being with me today on the Wave Capital's guest speaker series on relationship building in a team environment. Thank you so much again for your time. I really enjoyed our conversation and I look forward to staying in touch and,
Yeah, definitely. I think given that this is the first time we've ever talked, it wasn't as awkward as I
Yeah, no, I mean,
thought.
everybody pretty much experiences the same thing. Like when they talk to me, it's like, you ask the first question about what does relationship building mean to you? And then you'd be amazed that when it's time to ask the second question, everybody's so comforted and everybody's in their zone. There's a sports re reference in the zone and really feeling good. And that's what my objective is for people to talk about relationship building, for it to be a safe space to, convey ideas and thoughts and talk about their lives and their careers and just to have a great networking relationship building opportunity in the process.
I have to ask you, do you know Tom Brady? Why is there a little 12? Is that autograph? Do you have a relationship there?
Well, actually with Tom Brady, so I interviewed his executive director, Lisa Borges of the TB12 Foundation on my podcast, but no, I've never personally met Tom.
Oh, okay.
But
But you know
interesting.
someone who works for his team. Is that where you got the picture?
Well, actually, no, actually, great question. There was an auction that was
Oh,
going on
cool.
locally, and I donated to the American Cancer Society, and I bid on this a really beautiful piece, and it is beautifully displayed in my office. It's
Really
interesting.
nice.
It's interesting because Michael Lombardi was on my podcast, and I interviewed him just less than a year before he became the GM of the Tar Heels, and now he works for Bill Belichick at UNC. And my wife, actually, interestingly enough, real quick, my wife has a really good childhood friend whose grandfather, Rick Verzano, who coached the Detroit Lions, gave Bill Belichick his first head coaching job. And so there's a relationship with my wife's good friend from childhood whose grandfather gave Bill Belichick his first head coaching job, also coached with Lou Holtz, our former colleague at ESPN at the University of Connecticut. And
that's the thing about sports. It's such a small world. You work with everybody twice.
Right.
You know?
It is true. It really, really is true. It's 6 degrees of separation.
Not even. It's like 2 degrees.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Garrett.
Take care. Fun. Have a great day. Nice meeting with you again. Take care.
Okay. Talk soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.